T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
If we're talking about the year in review, all the things that happened in 2017, we have to talk politics. And if we're talking politics, we have to bring in Carl Calabrese, political strategist with Mazziello, Martucci, Calabrese and Associates. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
What would you say was, politically speaking, the number one story of this past year?
Oh, Donald Trump. Donald Trump has
been... Oh, well, yeah, but I mean
he's been, but no, he has been the center. It almost doesn't matter what the issue surrounding him is. He never leaves the center.
It doesn't matter what the issue surrounding him is because it's gone in a few days.
Exactly.
There's always something new with him.
And not only that,
so for you, it's not Gorsuch. For you, it's not tax reform. It's the president.
It's the president. Now, from that comes these other things. And part of the problem with this presidency is, besides it being exhausting, I mean, I look back at the year, if I had to use one adjective, it would be exhausting. You finish one fight and you want to catch your breath, and bam, you're back in the ring for the next fight. One of the things about this president is he is always at the center of the stage, and that oftentimes eclipses the policy issues that you just mentioned, David, the Supreme Court, the tax reform, and it just takes over. And that's one of his problems, that he can't back off a little bit and let these issues speak for themselves. That hurts him.
What do you think, given what you just said, do you think he's learned a lot from 1 year in the presidency? It seems like he's still acting the same way he did day one.
I'd have to say yes and no, and let me explain that. First of all, yes, because let's take tax reform. If you look at the way he handled tax reform compared to the way he handled
healthcare,
Obamacare,
yeah,
he learned. He learned. He stayed on message. He worked Congress better. He compromised. He laid out the big picture that he wanted. He worked the phones. He went on the road. He stayed focused when he was on the road talking about tax reform. All of those things differ from the way he handled Obamacare, which I gave him very poor grades on in terms of presidential leadership. So, yes, he seems to have learned how to use that office to get legislation passed. I don't think you're going to change Donald Trump, though, personally. He's still going to do the Twitter. He's still going to respond to every criticism and fight every fight. That's not going to change.
You called it exhausting a little bit ago. Does that exhaustion factor, the fatigue, work to his advantage? Will we reach a point where criticizing the president will be, people are criticizing the president, where Twitter will be just, he tweets. Does all of the controversy that people have attached to him in 2017 go away because of the exhaustion in 2018?
No, it doesn't go away. We're just going to continue to be different levels of exhaustion, I think. This is new territory. I mean, we've never had a presidency and a president like this that has so much drama day in and day out. I think we just got to get used to it. He obviously thrives on it, and as long as he thrives on it, it's not going to change. But I think that one of the problems he has is all of these fights, again, takes him away from his message. And although it certainly solidifies his base, there's no question about that. His base is still rock solid. It doesn't expand his base. And if he's going to win re-election, he can't win it by fighting the last war. He's going to have to expand his base, because let me tell you, one of the things of this past year is that the Democrat base is energized. They are coming out in these special elections at presidential year levels. And it wouldn't take many votes. He only won Michigan by 12,000 votes. You can do that in Detroit in terms of Democrat turnout. So if I were in the White House, a political advisor, my key piece of advice would be, don't fight the last war. It's different going into this next election. You're going to have to expand your base. And right now, these tactics he uses in terms of constantly fighting isn't doing that.
But looking at what you just said, expanding on that part, on the base, Democrats and Republicans, the two sides, where they started the year, where they're going to finish 2017, and where they're going. Are they where you expect them to be? You said the Republican, Donald Trump's base, is still there, hanging along with them with every fight, and the Democrats are growing theirs. Is that what you expected to see by the end of this year?
I did, but I think it could change. I think we're on the cusp of a change, and the change is tax reform. I have to give it to the Democrats and the left. They won the short game. They convinced, through the, with the help of the media, they convinced the average American that their taxes are not going to be cut. In fact, they're going to go up. And that's not going to happen. And they know that. They invested all of this political rhetoric into convincing people that you're going to be worse off. Well, guess what? Now reality hits. And people are going to start seeing in February increase in take-home pay because their taxes have been lowered. That's going to be tough to explain. Not one Democrat voted for this tax reform. Let me just give you an example. Basically, the math works out that for every $100 of take-home pay you bring home, you're going to get an extra $15 in your pocket. Now, if you're making $800 a week take-home, well, next year it's going to be $920. Now, if you're a working person and you're used to $800 a week, and all of a sudden you got $920, and you know you have it this week and next week and the week after and the week after, that is going to have an impact on this economy in a very positive way. So not only will people see that, the tax cut is helping them and benefiting them, but I believe it's going to jumpstart the economy. Those two things could come back to haunt the Democrats in a huge way because they said it wasn't going to. And neither one was going to happen.
And live in studio with us for the balance of this hour, most of it actually, political strategist Carl Calabrese from Mazziello Martucci, Calabrese & Associates. Let's talk more about this this particular interview. It was the first sit-down interview with President Obama since leaving office. And yes, we're doing year in review, but we're also looking ahead to 2018. What do you see as President Obama's role? Is he the agitator-in-chief on the sidelines? Does he just sit there in his serenity as he spoke to, Prince Harry? What happens?
By the way, I thought that was a great question the prince asked him about. What were you feeling when you were sitting there watching Donald Trump take the, oath of office? Barack Obama has not gone away, and he's not going to go away. You used the term agitator-in-chief. He has taken on a role that is quite different than most past presidents. I mean, most past presidents essentially go
step away.
They go into hibernation. You don't hear from them out of respect for the new administration. Barack Obama has not followed that rule almost from day one, and he's going to continue to be very active on his side of the aisle.
You know, that would continue in this. What we've seen over the last year, a lot of people saying Democrats have been kind of living in the past. Hillary Clinton continuing to be in the news even now, so far removed from the 2016 election. Do you see that continuing into 2018?
I do, because the Clintons have just as much difficulty leaving center stage as Barack Obama has had.
That can't be good for Democrats.
No, it's not good at all. I think there's a large wing of the Democratic Party that didn't want her last time. They want her even less now after it's come out in terms of just essentially how she did rig the primary elections against Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, wing of the party, is strong and it's growing. And, boy, they've got to really be, pardon the pun, taking a burn at all of the shenanigans that went on to make sure she got that nomination. So every time she comes out, it's just salt in that wound for the left on the Democratic
Party. But when either one of them, be it Obama or Hillary Clinton, open their mouth, microphones appear, mm-hmm. They have a pulpit. Do either one of them have a political organization to advance their ideas? Obama had that Organizing for America group. Anything still left?
Their strength lies in their ability to raise money. Both of them are money machines. Even if they're weakened, even if Hillary Clinton is weakened, there's still a part of that party that will pay whatever the going price is to hear her speak, buy her book, whatever. And that's where the strength is. As long as you can raise money in politics at any level, you're a player.
Hey, before that, we heard Michael Caputo with our Tom Puckett saying that in his mind, the top story of 2017, the Russia investigation. And Russia, I think that could have topped the list of most annoying words of 2017 that we did last week. Is that going to continue on into next year? Do you see that as one of the top stories?
No, because I don't think there's anything there. If there was anything there, we would have known about it by now. We've had two indictments, neither of which had anything to do with the campaign and Donald Trump. One had to do with lying to the FBI, and the other had to do with tax evasion. And so I think this continues to go on. And by the way, this Russian investigation, if it's taken a toll on anybody and anything, it's James Comey, Mr. Mueller, and the FBI. This thing has really shown some very, very concerning elements of the FBI, top leadership at the FBI, being extremely partisan and bringing those feelings to the law enforcement table, which is a no-no. So I think it's going to continue, but there's just nothing there. I would disagree. One thing I heard you say that Michael said, maybe he didn't quite say it this way, but that an improving economy won't help the Republicans. I disagree with that. I think an improving economy is hugely important. I read an interesting article recently about the late 90s and Bill Clinton and all of the problems problems he got in with Monica Lewinsky. And he survived. And one of the reasons he survived is because the economy was doing so well. And the article had a great, great line in it. It said, in politics, the wealth factor will always trump the yuck factor. Okay. And so, I mean, the wealth factor certainly overcame the yuck factor in Bill Clinton. And I think it's got the potential to do it again this coming in the next couple of years. People may very well say, I don't like Donald Trump, but boy, look at my 401k. My wages have gone up. My business has expanded. My taxes have gone down. I'm going to hold my nose and vote for him.
Don't they need someone to sound that trumpet, though, to point out, gee, tax reform was good for you?
Yes, they do. And I'm hoping
House elections will do that.
I'm hoping House elections will do that. You know, what's going to happen now is, you know, during this course of the year, members of Congress will be going home on a regular basis. They'll be conducting town hall meetings. They'll be doing polling. And once that increased take-home pay kicks in February, they're going to start picking that up in person and in polling. And the more they see it, the more they're going to talk about it. The more they tout it, it just takes on a life of its own. So I'm hoping the party, one of the things that bothers me about the Republican Party is their messaging strategy or lack of. Democrats are very, very disciplined when it comes to messaging. We saw it in this tax reform vote that they managed to convince the American people, again, with a huge assist from the mainstream media, that this was going to hurt them. Republicans didn't seem to have a messaging strategy. They had a policy strategy, but they never seemed to have a separate war room that says, okay, how are we going to sell this? How are we going to counteract Democrat talking points? And how are we going to respond to this question from the media? They just don't seem to have it. I'm hopeful. My fingers are crossed. Going into 2018, they put that together on a national level to sell it. My advice would be call Newt Gingrich and ask him how best to structure a messaging strategy going into 2018.
Understandably so, our conversation with Carl Calabrese live in studio has been focused on Donald Trump because 2017 was, again, the year of Trump. But Carl, locally, some big stories in politics too. How big going into 2018 is the Democrats taking over the Erie County legislature?
Well, I would limit that to the county legislature. There were some other things that happened locally that speak to the broad picture aspect of your question, Brian, and that is the Democrats took over the town of Amherst town board, and the Democrats now control the town boards of the first three ring suburbs, Tonawanda, Amherst, and Cheektowaga, in total. There's not a elected Republican on a town board or town supervisor in any one of those three towns. So when you take a look at it,
and that's indicative of, you think, a rise in registrations and a rise in
The Republican Party is down 134,000 votes in Erie County. That begins to take its toll after a while. Now, the Republicans did well in the three countywide seats. I mean, to win all three of those seats was an impressive string of victories, given that enrollment disadvantage. But as I said, I think earlier in the year, right after the election on this show, the Democrats won the long game because they now have a farm system. They now have a cadre of town council members and supervisors that are learning politics, learning how to raise money, building an organization, getting their name ID up. And when seats open up in the county legislature, in the state legislature, county executive, you've got people, known quantities, running large towns who can move up and be an A-list candidate immediately. So I think the greater significance was the fact that the Democrats now control all three first-ring suburbs, total of over 325,000 people. Add to that the Buffalo population, and you basically have nearly two-thirds of Erie County residents living in communities with 100% Democrat legislative bodies.
But in terms of policy, can you make the argument that now with a Democratic majority in the Erie County legislature, that Mark Poloncarz, as county executive, has a much freer hand to do some of the stuff that he maybe tried to do when Republicans were in control?
Absolutely. And not only a freer hand, but probably an easier hand.
Yeah.
You now control the body. You're going to have a friendly group of legislators who are on the same page as the county executive in terms of an agenda, and it's going to make life a lot easier. And the criticism now gets dial down a couple of notches because you're in the minority.
So what issues does he put forth now because he's able to?
That's a good question. I'm at a loss on that one. I think we have to wait and see what he rolls out as an agenda. This county executive is known for throwing some policy surprises. Just when you think he's going down one road, could, up pops another
could
issue.
Could be so, yeah, revisiting the plastic bags.
You just don't know. You just don't know. He may one of the hot issues in the city of Buffalo in this past year, which may turn over into the county, is what's called inclusionary zoning. The county executive has been talking about making inclusionary zoning for developers part of any incentive package that comes out of the ECIDA, the Erie County Industrial Development Agency. We'll see if he pursues that. There's been a lot of pushback on that. The city just had a consultant's report issued that said it's not going to work. In fact, it could be a detriment to development. So we'll see how that plays out.
We are wrapping up the year in politics with Carl Calabrese, our in-studio guest. And Carl, you brought a list with you. You have the winners and you have you know, the people who didn't win.
Losers, in other words.
Yeah, losers, in other words, I guess. So why don't we start there? You're losers of 2017.
It's a long list.
It's
a long list. Twice as long as my winners list. The losers list, I start with ISIS, which has lost 98% of their territory. A major reason is because Donald Trump changed the rules of engagement in fighting them and allowed the military to do what Rush Limbaugh is fond of saying, you know, kill people and break things. I have Harvey Weinstein. That's an obvious one, and an honorary mention to all of the others, from Matt Lauer to Charlie Rose, so on and so forth. There's so many of them. I put in my loser list the Democrats in terms of the way their strategy for handling this tax cut. Not one Democratic vote on that. They don't have any ability now to say that they had a part in all the good things that are going to come. I have the mainstream media, which I thought the mainstream media lost a lot of credibility during the campaign. They've continued to just essentially abandon any sense of objectivity in covering this president. It is so biased. I don't even read anything anymore with a byline of New York Times or Washington Post. I put the FBI in there. I think the FBI has done some serious damage to itself. Again, not the agent on the street. I'm talking about the highest levels, the political leadership of the FBI have gotten way too involved in politics, and I think there's going to be more revelations to come. Hillary Clinton is on my list because she lost and will not go away. I put the NFL on my list. The NFL badly handled the national anthem issue. The game continues to get bogged down, not just in replays and overturning plays, but the number of penalty flags. It drives me crazy that almost every other play there's a penalty flag. Just as an aside, a couple of months ago, my son-in-law and I were watching the Alabama-Ole Miss game. They played 8 minutes into the second quarter before the first penalty flag flew. And then another 5 minutes into the third quarter before the second one flew. So they played 23 minutes from the first to the second quarter of uninterrupted football by flags.
Hey, you think that's good? Just wait till Vince McMahon brings back the XFL. You're going to love it.
Yeah. I put Al Gore's movie, the sequel to Inconvenient Truth, which earned a grand total of $3.5 million at the box office, was a tremendous flop. Steve Bannon and Roy Moore, the two of them are kind of coupled because that was Steve Bannon's candidate. Roy Moore's interview with Sean Hannity has to go down as one of the worst interviews in media history, when he was asked by Sean Hannity, do you date teenage girls? His answer was generally no. And then he qualified it by saying, but I asked permission of the parents first. I mean, they'll be studying that in TV school for a long time. And then lastly, I put down free speech on college campuses. I mean, what's going on in college campuses now is scary. That almost, in some campuses, the vast majority of students do not believe in the First Amendment anymore and are willing to shut down speakers rather than argue using logic and facts. They've turned into an unruly mob. I think that's very concerning to me.
All right, but the other side of your column, the winners.
Real quick, Donald Trump.
You really think he's a winner?
I do. Put it this way. When you look at his
with
policies.
With the way people are battling him so much?
When you look at his policy successes, which the media does not cover, and that's, I think, an interesting point. Not only does the media have bias in what it covers, it has bias in what it doesn't cover. I mean, I can go through a list of a dozen things. His cutting of regulations, the tax cut bill, his Supreme Court nominee, his appellate court nominees, drilling in Anwar, approving pipelines, selling of liquid natural gas to Europe, which has broken the Russian control over European energy, selling anti-tank weapons to Ukraine, the unemployment statistics, the economy is starting to come back, the defeat of ISIS. All of those are very positive things. They're just not covered.
You could make an argument that his name belongs on the winner's list because he's getting what he wants every single day, and it's whether it's positive or negative, and no matter what the outlet is, his name is at the front of it.
And he's driving the agenda. So I put him on my list. I put, and this will probably upset a lot of the Trumpsters, but I put Mitch McConnell on my list because it was Mitch McConnell's decision not to fill the Scalia seat in Obama's last term that allowed the vacancy to be filled by Trump. That's going to have impact 20, 25 years into the future, and the fact that under Mitch McConnell's leadership, the Senate has approved like four times as many judges to the appellate courts, which are hugely important, than has occurred under President Obama. And most of these judges are like disciples of Antonin Scalia. So that's going to have impact. I put on my winner's list the Democratic base voter, which is energized now. And if Republicans don't come up with a strategy for turning out their base, they could have some serious trouble coming into the
and
year.
And briefly, Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown won re-election this year. On your list or not?
He's
on the winner list.
On the winner's list, all locally. Right.
Carl Calabrese joining us live in studio for one more segment of Masiello, Martucci, Calabrese and Associates. We're talking 2017 in review. And Carl, the one thing when I look at 2017, how Washington is operating, and with the exception of there was a VA bill early in the Trump presidency, there was absolutely no working together of Republicans and Democrats. I was actually shocked. On the local level yesterday, we had Stefan Mihailu, Mark Poloncarz standing together, beside a podium, and it was really refreshing to see. Does that change at all as we go forward into 2018?
Not on the national level, no. The Democrats have settled on a strategy of resistance, and the way you know that is you've got a number of U.S. senators, Democrats, that are running for re-election this coming year in states that Donald Trump won by huge margins, double digits. Not one of them voted for this tax cut bill. Not a one. That tells me that they have convinced themselves, we'll see, time will tell, that they can win just based on a resistance strategy as opposed to a proactive strategy. So they've made their bed. We'll see how that works out for them.
All right. If we're talking about working together, though, let's look at each party. How big of a rift does there still exist in the Republican Party? And talk a little bit, you mentioned earlier, the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders wing of the Democrats versus the Hillary Clinton wing of the Democrats.
There is risk in both parties. Again, the media just tends to cover the one in the Republican Party. There is certainly a rift in the Republican Party. There has still yet to be a reconciliation between the Trump wing of the party and the establishment wing of the party. And I mentioned this on your show the last time I was on after the Alabama race. Republican establishment candidates seem to have a tough time winning primaries. And insurgent Trump candidates seem to have a tough time winning general elections. And until those two wings come together and figure out how to find a candidate that meets the criteria of both wings, they're going to have trouble. The Democratic Party, people do not realize how far left the Democratic Party has moved, is moving, and will continue to move. You've got the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders wing of the party, very strong, growing stronger. And I think anybody who runs for president under the Democrat banner in 2020 is going to have to sign on to what I call the free stuff agenda. Free entry into the country, open borders, free college tuition, free medical care. That's the agenda that's being driven most powerfully now by that left wing.
One more before we let you go. In 2018, you mentioned 2020. We're already going to be talking about it. Will the candidates kind of become clear for what we're going to be looking at in 2020 on the Democrat side for president?
No, because there could be so many of them. If you take a look at early lists of potential Democrat candidates, there's over a dozen in terms of some governors, senators. Left wing of the party, though, the progressive wing of the party, will drive this process. And I think no matter who runs, you're going to see them, really catering to that, again, what I call the free stuff agenda.
All right, Carl Calabrese, political strategist with Masiello, Martucci, Calabrese and Associates, joining us once again in studio. Carl, thanks for all your insight over 2017.
Enjoyed it. And Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
Yep, Happy New Year to you. We look forward to much more in 2018.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.